What is up, Sacramento? Happy Friday. A very, very happy Friday joining you here. Styles and Watkins. No Styles today. He is on a much-deserved vacation, a little break, getting some golf in, getting some spring training in. Joining me today in Allen's place is a very good friend, and you've heard him. You heard him earlier today on the morning show with Dave and Jason. Our Kings insider, Brendan Nunez. Brendan, thank you so much for joining me, and it's a pretty good occasion to be joining me after that Sacramento Kings massive, I shouldn't say massive win yesterday, but it felt pretty big after how that game was going. Brendan, how you doing? What were your thoughts on last night?
I'm doing good, man. Thanks for having me. Glad to be doing this with you. And yeah, massive win over the worst team in the Western Conference. That's without their at, far and away best player. But at this point, a win is a win.
Yeah.
Standings are close. You take them how you can get them, I guess.
That's exactly right, man. Beggars cannot be choosers at this point in the season. You know, the Kings are obviously in the thick of this Western Conference playoff race. And, you know, I've said it before, you got to treat these games against the bad teams almost as much as you treat the games against the good teams, because these games are just as important. These games that you're pretty much chalking up as wins before they even, you know, tip off the ball. The Kings have to get games like last night, and, you know, at the end of the day, it was a W. You mentioned the Spurs without one of their best players. As we know, Victor Wembanyama didn't play yesterday. The Spurs now move to 0-7 when Wemby doesn't play, with an average margin of victory of 11.5 points. And, you know, Brendan, I'll just start us here. This is another game in which the Sacramento Kings, I don't want to say don't show up, because I do think a big part of last night's performance from the Spurs side was they did play really well. You do have to give them credit. And I talked about on the post-game live stream yesterday, I think that there's a lot of guys in that locker room from San Antonio who probably say, you know, Wemby's not playing today, and we've had to take a pretty big backseat to Wemby for a lot of this year, rightfully so. We all acknowledge it's probably best for that organization, but, you know, some of those guys, I'm sure Malachi Branham, I'm sure, you know, Devin Vassell and Keldon Johnson, who's moved to the bench, I'm sure they felt like yesterday was an opportunity for them to show what they had, and I think that's exactly what you're going to get against a desperate team like the Kings were playing yesterday. And you know, just what did you think of that Spurs performance from the first of all, and second of all, again, this is a yet another performance in which the Kings kind of struggle, or definitely struggle, to play against a team that is not at full strength. We've seen it against Miami, we've seen it against Chicago the other day, and now you can add San Antonio to that list as well. Just what do you make of all of these difficulties in putting these kind of teams away?
Yeah, shoot, you could throw Charlotte in there.
Man.
You could throw Detroit in
Portland.
There. You can sadly keep going down the line. And they're all home losses to make it even worse, which
crazy.
We'll get into a little later in the show. But San Antonio side, sure, no Wemby. Still Popovich on the other side. And they have solid players that I think are smart. Specifically, I'm a big Trey Jones, Devin Vassell guy. I think those guys are really impactful. And Vassell getting an opportunity to get some more shots up. Keldon Johnson does some of the right things. Malachi Branham, a guy the Kings really liked at the time of the draft, by the way, had a pretty big night too. So they're going to play hard. But I think the thing with this Kings team is their defense is still so bad.
Yeah. Like, it's really bad.
So bad. It doesn't even matter what the other guys out there are. Devin Vassell has players he can pick on. The pick and roll defensive coverage is really bad. The turnovers were a big issue for the Kings yesterday. They have 13 that lead to 27 San Antonio points. Of their 129, 27 come off turnovers. Malik Monk had 6 of them. He talked about it after the game, you know, kind of needing to play off 2 feet instead of going up off putting himself in tough spots. So I'll take it. It's a very good offensive win for the Kings, but that's how they're winning these games so far, is putting up a lot of points. It's second straight where they put up 130 in regulation.
That's a great point. Yeah, I mean, the offense is clicking, and, you know, just in general, De'Aaron Fox yesterday, in fact, he gets 33 points, only hitting 1-3 yesterday, or I'm sorry, the day before that, he had the career high 44, only hit 2 threes, only hit 2 threes in that game. And Brendan, I have some good news for you, and I have some bad news for you. Good news, the Kings only missed 1 free throw yesterday, 94%, 17 of 18 from the free throw line. I got some bad news for you, though, too. San Antonio Spurs come into last night as, I think, the second worst three-point shooting team, either worst or second worst three-point
percentage.
Worst in percentage three-point shooting team in the NBA. They shot 47% last night. Brendan, what is that about? And I know I've asked you this before, but I joke that you and me could probably shoot 38% against this team, but seriously, it doesn't matter what team walks in, especially to Golden 1 Center, which feels like a shooter's gym at this point.
Yeah.
But any team that plays the Kings, it feels like you can just bank in that they're going to shoot 40% on that night. What is that about?
It's the second time, again, that the Spurs, who were also the worst three-point percentage team at last time the Kings played them, came in and hit close to 50% of their triples.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's guys that you wouldn't necessarily expect to be doing it. Like, yeah. Devin Vassell does it, right?
Right.
But Keldon Johnson, 4 of 11.
Chucking.
Got up 11 threes.
Yeah.
But a lot of it is the Kings have such bad perimeter defense.
Right.
And the way their schemes are of all this no middle defense and all that,
yeah.
It just requires so many rotations from guys on the weak side.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you got to play on a string from there and keep rotating after the fact. And it takes everybody, again, being on a string,
yeah.
being engaged, and being predictive. You can't be reactionary.
Exactly.
It can't be after the pass is getting there, then you're closing out. And I think that's a lot of what happens is they just are a little slow on some of these
yeah.
rotations. And maybe a guy they have labeled as a hot shooter
right.
ends up, you know, just in the course of your rotation, getting more left open than you would like. But it's clearly an issue. Teams are shooting 39.8% from three
insane.
Against the Kings. It's the worst in the league.
That's insane.
It's ridiculous.
That is so bad. And I actually love what you just said there. I've not heard anybody put it that way, but I think that's really the core of what's wrong with the Kings defensively with their rotations is you say they're more reactive than predictive. And I think with how fast the game is played nowadays, you have to be anticipating
yeah.
what the next move is. And I think you see too many times, you know, they get a lot of those bang, bang, charge block calls. And a lot of that is just, they're just like a half tick too slow. And you could see that's, you know, that's Mike Brown trying to implement his defense and clearly harping on them on the defensive end. But, you know, that's where it becomes how much of this team is maxing out their defensive potential. They're doing the best they can versus just defense sometimes is a bit of just natural instincts. The same way rebounding is and, you know,
right.
court vision, those kind of things. There are some people who are just better inclined to play defense than others. And it's a struggle that this Kings team has dealt with all year long. And I don't see an end to it. And I think that it's a really bad sign for the playoffs if you as a team can't hit free throws and just allow every team to shoot the lights out against you.
Yeah, you better score if that's
right.
what's going to happen
yeah.
here. And I think also your offense can't hurt your defense
yes.
with those
right.
turnovers. Like, you can't make life even harder on yourself when you're already not good there. And it's really the personnel. Like, Kevin Huerter, not a good defender. Harrison Barnes at this point has okay moments,
right.
I think, on the ball. Like,
but you
just,
get him in screens
fights,
and stuff. And
but, yeah, screens
over.
Is not going well, which there's screens on almost every
possession, play.
Let me tell
yep.
you. Malik Monk, not very good either. Like,
yeah.
you look at the backup bigs, their foot speed can get a little exposed. Domantas
yeah.
Sabonis, the way that he plays defense, like the way they kind of put him at the level,
yeah.
I think is part of this, where it creates all those rotations after the fact. And I think that's a big reason that you've seen Davion Mitchell and
right.
Keon Ellis
yep.
stand out as much as they have.
Three
those guys
lineups,
are instinctual,
right.
smart defenders that are doing what we were talking about. They're predicting and knowing ahead of time,
right.
this is where I'm going to be going. The second that that pass starts to, that they even start to think about making that
already
motion,
there.
I'm going to start to rotate. So
yeah.
I think that's part of the reason these guys have stood out so much.
Yes. We will be joined later in the 11 o'clock hour by our good friend Frankie Cardicelli. We're going to talk about a lot of things from last night. Going to, of course, talk about this team's performance, break down Mike Brown's thoughts, what went right yesterday, what went wrong yesterday. I'm going to ask Frankie and Brendan how much should we take of process versus the actual results of these games. Of course, we're going to dive into fans' right to boo became a very large topic in yesterday's game. Malik Monk had some words to say. Domantas Sabonis had some words to say. Of course, even though Allen's not here, we are going to continue to pocket watch, looking at the standings in the Western Conference. A really big weekend ahead from the Sacramento Kings. They play the Houston Rockets on Sunday. There's tons of games that will impact the standings before then. Our good buddy, friend of the station, Sam Amick, dropped an article this morning with a lot of good nuggets in The Athletic. And we're going to talk a little bit later in the show. Colby Jones has a massive performance yesterday for the Stockton Kings in Golden 1 Center, funny enough. We're going to talk about if Colby Jones can maybe have an impact on this team this season and what the future maybe holds for Colby as well. Don't go anywhere. Brendan Nunez filling in for Alan Stiles. You're tuning in to Stiles and Watkins right here on Sactown Sports 1114. We've got some early breaking news here. It's not nothing crazy. No need to pull your car over or anything, but news from Adam Schefter on the 49ers front, giving one of their key players an extension here. Might not be who you think. Adam Schefter reports here, the 49ers are giving offensive tackle Colton McKivitz a one-year, $7 million extension. Of course, McKivitz is a member of the 49ers starting offensive line group. You know, a lot of questions in the preseason about whether McKivitz I would be able to hold down that spot. Of course, it wasn't really a problem for the Niners this season, but definitely interesting that they're going to go one more year on Colton McKivitz. We're going to go right back into Kings here and talk about what went right in last night's game. I can't lie to you, Brendan. I'm not going to lie to the audience either. Pull back the curtain a little, as they say. I started this rundown in the middle of the game yesterday, and I started with, okay, so we're going to do nice little, of course, we're just going to do a general recap in the first segment. Second segment, probably going to do what went right, and then we'll do what went wrong. And then halfway through that fourth quarter, I realized I might need to swap those two segments. I might need to start with what went wrong first and then go into what went right. Thankfully, since the Kings got the result, I feel like we can focus more on the positive. Sabonis, of course, gets the steal at the end of the game and seals it for the Kings in probably the most exciting finish that the Kings have had last year or this year. Of course, last season, the Kings had tons of exciting finishes mainly from that guy, De'Aaron Fox. Of course, the Orlando half-court game winner, the Chicago game winner, of course, comes to mind, but just a lot more. You know, you had the Clippers double overtime game as well. Haven't really had that level of excitement in a Kings game this year, and it was nice to, well, it wasn't, I wouldn't say it was nice to go through it, but it was cool to have that moment again in Golden 1 Center to kind of have the energy restored. You recorded a wonderful video of the Malik Monk game tying shot yesterday from three, and Brendan, I'm gonna say it, I mean, at least from your phone's perspective, that was the loudest pop I have heard since the Kevin Herter game winner last year against Utah.
The Kevin Herter is the other one. That game winner against Utah, I think, tops it, but it's up there.
Yeah, it was close.
And you know, I see some fans of other teams like, oh, my God, you get so excited for beating the worst team in the West without Wemby. And it's like, you know, this is a credit to the Golden 1 crowd.
That's right.
And this fan base that is so excited in this game, just a random Thursday night game. There's big season or standing implications, sure, but this is not a huge game necessarily.
Right.
And Golden 1 absolutely shows out like they always do. Super loud. I mean, and it was a gutsy moment from Malik Monk,
too. It was crazy.
And it looked stressful at the end there. I think they're down five. It's like, gosh, this is an uphill battle. Yeah. Domas said after the game, like he said, quote, it looked pretty ugly there with a minute left. And I was like, ugh, not again. Like, everybody was feeling
that
it.
That game was over. It was over.
And it was going to be the most on-brand loss ever.
Ever. It was coming after a great win. You're feeling good. It's an absolute, people will call it a trap game, but if we're being honest, like, you just have to win those kind of games, especially after you've already done this so many times. Yeah, it was a great win. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to call anybody out by name. Of course, I saw some fans heading for the exits. I also saw a couple media members starting to head for the exits there.
They might have been San Antonio media members.
They did. They left with a minute left. The second De'Aaron Fox fouled out, I saw two San Antonio media members hop out, and I don't know if they're trying to beat the rush to the press conference or what, but I definitely saw some people head towards the exits a little bit early. But let's talk about what went right yesterday. And the big thing for me is definitely the fact that De'Aaron Fox, even though he fouls out, and Domantas Sabonis shined yesterday. The Kings' two stars were absolutely terrific. Of course, Malik had the late-game heroics and ended up having a really good game himself. But for De'Aaron Fox and Domantas Sabonis, on the second night of a back-to-back, to combine for 64 points between the two of them, Sabonis with a 17-rebound, 9 assists on top of that, De'Aaron had 3 steals, 5 rebounds. Like I said, 1 of 7 from 3. He was 14 of 32 last night. He was 16 of 32 the night before. So really just putting the team on his back, really, and understanding that. And this is something I've been asking for a while, is De'Aaron Fox is the best player on this team. How many times in the past 4 or 5 years have we heard this team goes as far as De'Aaron takes us? He's the head of the snake. And, you know, frankly, this offense is a little equal opportunity. It spreads the wealth. It might be an HB night. It might be a Kevin Huerter day. It might be a Keegan Murray day. It definitely, more times than not, is going to be a De'Aaron Fox night. But very rarely it feels like you just see De'Aaron Fox have these superstar kind of games where he's going to put up 30 points or 30 attempts, and it's going to really be on him to determine the outcome. What did you think of Fox and Sabonis yesterday?
I mean, Fox has 77 points in 48 hours, which is just ridiculous. And I actually didn't think he was great in that Spurs game except the fourth quarter. Yeah. He had 17 points, 17 of his 33 in that fourth quarter. Also not the most efficient night.
Definitely
like not. You look at Domas, 31 points on 14 makes, 19 attempts. You look at De'Aaron, 14 makes, 33 points, 32 attempts. Yeah. You know, De'Aaron was getting him up. And I also think that the fouling out at the end for De'Aaron was
tough.
A very bad moment that if they would have lost that game, we'd be talking at very differently. But Fox came up really big in that fourth quarter. Again, I think that 17-point fourth quarter was huge for them. And Domas, man, without Wemby out there, no big is guarding him.
Dominant.
And I've been calling for, like, score a little bit more
sometimes
when you're out there. Yep. And he's one that I'm just going to make the right play. I'm going to take what the game gives me. Sometimes go and take it is all. And I think that he got Zach Collins in foul trouble early. Dominic Barlow is an intriguing young big. Rookie big is not slowing down Domas.
No.
It's not
Doesn't
happening.
Stand a chance.
No. And so I thought that he did a great job taking advantage of that. Even the 17 boards with 5 offensive in there, 14 offensive rebounds for the Kings on the night. They rebound in general very well as a team, and they both just did a little bit of everything. It was all you would want from your star players, and you got all these complimentary pieces specifically off the bench showing up as well.
Yeah, and that you led me right where I wanted to go there. The bench points for the Kings last night I have as a major positive. It's actually really funny looking at the actual game bench points, the comparison between the two teams. You would not say that the Kings probably deserve to be the one shining when you look at the bench points, because, the Kings played fantastic off the bench. 47 bench points is incredible. It's probably one of the Kings' highest totals this year. The problem is, you look at San Antonio's bench points, they had 62 bench points yesterday. So I don't want to focus on the San Antonio side, but the Kings bench yesterday was fantastic. Of course, Malik scoring 18, but you had Davion Mitchell providing 9 points. You see his offense really picking up. Trey Lyles had 9 points. He hit a 3. You need that from Trey every night. But then Keon Ellis, who we're going to talk more about Davion and Keon in this next segment here coming up in a second, but Davion and Keon offensively, them contributing on that side of the ball is so huge, because it just, I won't say it justifies their minutes, but it really does allow them to get a longer run. You see Keon yesterday plays more minutes than Kevin Huerter does.
Wyatt.
Keon with 17, Huerter with 16. I mean, those two, specifically these last two games, Davion has really hit his threes a whole lot better in the last 20 games or so. But just specifically those two guys, you talked about their defense and how important they are just on that side of the ball. But offensively yesterday and these past two games, what have you seen from them that you're liking?
Yeah, I mean, I think defensively you know what you get out of those guys, right? Like Davion, they play different styles defensively, but they're both equally effective. Davion is very physical on the ball. He's going to kind of get up into you, does a decent job getting through screens. Keon is more handsy, right? Very active, like disruptive defender more so. And active hands with guys cutting in or even just on the ball for himself. But offensively, finding a way to fit in is just as important, because while the team needs to be better defensively, their offense is still their identity.
Yeah.
That's how they're winning these games. And I think Mike Brown might want to lean into the defense a little more, but I think you have to commit to the offense and find ways to get stops. But Keon does, he just fits out there offensively. He cuts hard. He shoots the ball really well. He was a great three-point shooter for Stockton last year. I know he had a slow start when he was playing for Sacramento early this year, but he's a good shooter.
Yeah.
You saw it last night. Like, there were two possessions where a guy goes under a screen when he's coming off a Sabonis dribble handoff, and he's happy to let it fly quickly.
Yeah.
And he does a good job stopping, making sure that guy stays behind where he's going to stop when it comes to that. And they're fitting in. And Davion specifically offensively, I feel like you've seen that a lot. Ever since that Minnesota game, it feels like for me, where no De'Aaron, they're like, we need you to be more aggressive.
Yeah.
Davion is as quick as they come, I really feel like, in
he
the
really
league
is.
With the ball in his
especially
hands.
Especially his first step.
He can get past players. It's just making the right decision from there.
Right.
And I think we've seen that more often these last couple games. And it helps when you go 4-of-4 from three against the Lakers.
Sure does.
You go 1-of-2. In this game against the Spurs. Yeah. Helps when the three is going down for sure on Davion's end, but I feel like he's been more decisive and
definitely
and like clinical with his attacking
absolutely.
Offensively.
Yeah, you can feel that he just knows what he's going to – it feels like he knows what he's going to do before he does it. And it felt like before maybe he was making up his mind as it was happening. And, yeah, it's the three-point shooting, but it's also him attacking the rim. It's been a real development for Davion here recently, and I hope he continues to grow on it. And I think it's something really sustainable that he can really bring to this team moving forward. TC, we see you on the phone line. We are going to hear Mike Brown's thoughts on Keon Ellis and Davion Mitchell coming up here in a second. We're also going to hear Mike Brown talk about how he thought his team performed yesterday. And yes, we are going to get into a little bit of what went wrong yesterday. Coming back right here in a minute, Styles and Watkins, no Styles, Brendan Nunez in for him right here on Sacktown Sports 11. Davion Mitchell and Keon Ellis have really, really played well these last couple games, and you know, I don't know, Brendan, it's got me to start thinking, you know, with Kevin Huerter and his struggles recently, could we maybe see, I don't know, a shakeup in the starting lineup? Could we see, you know, it become a little bit more routine at the very least, that one of those two guys, if not both, end up getting more minutes on given nights than Kevin Huerter? It's kind of started to open up a bit of a situation here where, you know, I think a lot of people have been left cold with how Kevin has played this year. I mean, you've talked about it. We've talked about it on King's Roundtable. And I think fans have definitely started to notice that there's been an uptick here as the playoffs approach. Teams aren't really messing around. And you see Kevin Huerter getting put in a lot of isolations. Kevin Huerter essentially getting hunted early by other teams. And kind of forces Mike Brown into a decision where if Kevin's not making shots, you know, it's tough to justify playing him a lot. And, you know, it's been a while since Kevin has really been a staple in the closing lineup. So, you know, that's already been a struggle for him. Where are you at right now with just kind of that rotation and where, you know, where maybe you'd like to see Mike Brown go and where you actually think he will start going?
Yeah, I mean, I think currently
Duarte as well. Sorry to throw into that. Chris Duarte has also played well here recently.
Yeah, he definitely belongs in the conversation, and that's kind of where Keon's minutes have come from recently. These last two games,
right.
Chris Duarte not getting out there. Instead, they're going with Keon. They're going with smaller lineups, which I think helps defensively. I do think that Keon, they're different defenders, but he's more disruptive, lets them get steals, deflections, get out and transition on the other end. But the Kevin situation is interesting to me because maybe now I'm looking for it.
Right. I've thought that too.
Offensively, like yesterday, there's a play early in the game. I believe this is still during the first starting lineup phase here, first 5-6 minutes, where he goes for a cut and Domas makes him a pass and it bounces off his leg and goes out of bounds. And Kevin looked fairly frustrated. And again, maybe I'm looking for it and overlooking these things. But I feel like those are the type of moments, or there's another one where maybe this is the Lakers game. They go for a dribble handoff, and Kevin kind of gets hit on the arm, doesn't get the pass, and it ends up being a turnover. And it's like, I think all these little frustrating moments probably feel even more agitating to Kevin right now because he's like, gosh, like I better take advantage of these minutes or I already know that like I'm going to be limited in my opportunity tonight because that's just how this has gone. So I think that it kind of can snowball, I guess, is what I'm getting at here. And all it'll take is a good game from Kevin, I think, to really shake this off. Because offensively, he's extremely valuable to this team. I always point out his pace in the half court specifically, because everybody runs in transition. But Kevin sprints through his actions in the half court. Yeah. His spacing is always still going to be valuable. Teams are going to treat him as an elite three-point shooter because he is.
Even if
they have not
gone down. He still has the gravity.
It 100% will always be there. So Kevin has his value, but defensively it has been tough, and I think the big thing is there was a point in the season where teams just decided, okay, we're going to really do this a lot, is hunt Kevin early, and I would imagine what happens is, say, San Antonio comes into town, they're going to watch the last couple Kings games. They're going to watch when they played the Lakers, when they played Chicago, and they're going to see the beginning of the game, oh, wow, these other teams hunted Kevin, and it worked. Like, maybe we should try to do this.
And you see it get to him.
And we've seen it a lot these last few games. It really feels like since that Miami game, not that it never existed before, but it seems even more extreme.
Yeah.
And these other guys just survive better defensively while still providing something offensively. But I still almost trust Kevin more long-term than some of these other guys, like Malik, or not Malik Monk, but Davion Mitchell and Keon Ellis specifically. Offensively, they still have a lot of question marks.
Right.
They're playing well right now, like we talked about. They deserve their flowers, and I hope it keeps up, but it wouldn't surprise me if they have their struggles here too. And eventually, it's going to be Kevin's turn again, in my mind.
Yeah, no, and I mean, it's a really good point, and especially the snowball thing. It's something I talked about yesterday on the post game. Is just, you know, you can almost see Kevin writing narratives in his head as bad plays happen, as he misses shots. You can almost see him getting down on himself. And, you know, again, like, you can almost hear the thoughts in his head saying, oh, there's Herter again, missing a shot. Oh, of course it's Herter. And, you know, yesterday, you see him look pretty down. I mean, you can, everybody out there can go rewatch the game and look for Kevin Herter on the bench. Had a towel over his head for a majority of the time where he wasn't out there in the fourth quarter. And he looked down, like, you know, he wasn't out there, you know, jumping around like Mason Jones or something after those games. Not that he was, I'm not trying to imply he wasn't excited for the team, but I just think you really see that Kevin's play is starting to affect Kevin Herter, the actual person. And that's just not a good spot to be at as a professional athlete, and definitely not as a shooter. Some, you know, a position or a skill set that is a large percentage mental. I mean, these guys take tons, thousands of shots every single day. You know, they work on it. It's almost like they can shoot blindfolded. But yeah, you start messing with their heads and things start to really go down. I want to play this sound. This is actually, I think you asked this question of Mike Brown the other day in the media scrum about, you know, how do you really figure out if it's going to be a Davion night or if it's going to be a Keon night, or is it a night for both of them? Here's what Mike Brown had to say.
Davion has played well over a stretch, and, you know, and Keon did too. But the bottom line is because Davion has a little bit more experience, he's going to have the advantage if they're both playing well. And they're both playing well. And I still have to, because Keon's played, when Keon's gotten an a real opportunity, the result speaks for itself. I mean, he's 4-0 as a starter. He does little things that we need people to do, from deflections to being able to guard ones and twos, his length and his ability to play the pick and roll the way he does, and some other things. And so I have to try to find ways to be creative to get him on the floor because he's played so well when he's gotten minutes.
Do you think that it could include playing them together?
It could. You know, it could include playing them together. It could have them playing as the off guard, you know. And then, you know, at the end of the day, again, it's up to me to put whoever is playing well on the floor at any given time.
So there you go. There you have it. You hear it straight from Mike Brown's mouth. And that was actually, Brendan asked those questions a couple days back, so actually before that Laker game. You could have had the insight. You could have known that Mike Brown was maybe going to look to play both of those guys at the same time. Those guys both combined offensively. I know we're talking about their defense, but combined offensively for 20 points and had a combined, how many? Two threes. They hit two. No, I'm sorry. Keon, it was 3 of 5 from three yesterday. They combined 4 threes made yesterday, and that transitions me over to what I want to talk about next. Just in terms of what went wrong from yesterday, I know we talked about Kevin Herter's defense, and I'm not trying to pile on, but Kevin Herter's offense yesterday, and not just Kevin, the Kings shooters yesterday, not only could you say they didn't play well, they just didn't even shoot the ball. I mean, Kevin Herter and Keegan Murray yesterday combined 1 of 9 from the field, 1 of 6 from three. The combined only taking 6 threes between the two of them. I, you know, That's really strange to me because this team obviously has throughout this season tried to put like 40 threes up per game, and they hit 32 or took 32 of them yesterday. Just the fact that Kevin and Keegan usually have the ultimate green light, and yesterday especially, it just felt like both offensively were just non-options. Is that concerning to you? And what have you read just kind of on Kevin and Keegan, I guess, also has put together some offensive performances that I think leave a lot of people wanting more.
Yeah, definitely struggling a little bit recently. I mean, I think they are guys that still get set up by their teammates. Keegan has gotten a little bit better about trying to be able to create his own shot.
That little mid-range step back's looking nice these days.
He's doing all right. Yeah. I like him seeing him play with it a little bit here and there. But like yesterday, you know, they have 76 points in the paint, 55 attempts. It seemed like that is where they felt like they could really make their money.
Especially
against
the Spurs,
Wemby, without Wemby very specifically, yeah. So, you know, I mean, I think that it also helps when you get stops while you're out there. And again, Kevin, not doing great on that aspect so far. And it's a rhythm thing. Also, Kevin specifically is a guy that is up and down. And Keegan as well has been throughout the course of this season. I think there's varying levels of aggression. And some nights where maybe HB has an advantageous matchup, they're going to go to that a little bit more.
17 for HB yesterday.
Really, last night, it's just De'Aaron, Domas, and Malik. And go make a play and kick it to make the right read from there. And if a guy's open, they're going to pull it. And a lot of times I think the Spurs did a decent job rotating on the perimeter, but left the paint a little bit more exposed. So I think yesterday it was just kind of the nature of how San Antonio defended and maybe the Sacramento's game plan coming into the night. But in general, I think seeing some easy ones go down help.
Yeah,
right? Kevin Herter, beginning of that game, that again, backdoor pass, it goes off his foot. Like maybe you see that one go down, you feel a little bit better. I think also these guys can force a little bit when shots haven't gone down, trying to like, I just need to see one.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
And Kevin has that nature a little bit sometimes, but again, these guys both have their value. I think even when shots are not going down, Kevin spacing, as we mentioned, Keegan makes an impact defensively fairly often. I still feel like on most nights, and that's why he's out there playing 31 minutes. So. Right. You know, last night, I think offensively, like, I'm okay overlooking those ones a little bit because you got production from HB, from Malik, Trey, Davion, as we went on, Keon.
Yeah. And I feel bad. I can't complain about this team chucking up shots way too much and living and dying by the three and then have their shooters not take a ton of shots when they're clearly not on and, you know, have complaints about that. So I definitely get it. And, just one more thing in the what went wrong from yesterday. You mentioned it a little bit earlier. De'Aaron Fox fouling out. Dude, what was that sixth foul? Like, especially with a minute to go in a really – it was a three-point game before De'Aaron gets that foul. It sends them to the line and puts them up five. Like, I know you're not De'Aaron Fox, but if you could just play – De'Aaron, what were you thinking? Like, what was that?
Probably that I'm going to get this steal and be the hero. You know, but
risk reward.
And Malachi Branham doesn't have the tightest handle. De'Aaron has gotten a lot of those steals this year, but that's not the time to do it.
No.
It was a very, very bad decision from Fox. And again, they lose that game. I think we're talking about that way differently. Like,
absolutely.
That was a pivotal moment, especially he was cooking 17 in the fourth.
Right.
He was hard carrying that team in that quarter. He was doing everything for them offensively and then kind of leaves them high and dry really at the end. So that one, he has to be better. That was a pretty inexcusable mistake, and he wasn't very close.
No, it wasn't very close. It was a bad decision. The only positive is, in a weird way, if you don't get De'Aaron Fox fouling out, you don't have the team kind of coming together and ultimately getting the victory as a team. Harrison Barnes has a piece of it. Malik Monk has a piece of it. Domantas Sabonis has a piece of it. I feel like, in a weird way, if you are going to lose, if you are going to have a close game against the Spurs, that's kind of the best possible scenario, is everybody feeling good after the result, everyone feeling like they had a huge hand in making it happen. Next, we are going to talk about, after this short little break here, we're going to pocket watch a bit. There was a lot of action in the NBA yesterday. A lot of close games, and a lot of games that impact the Kings in the Western Conference standings. Styles and Watkins right here. Don't go anywhere. Sactown Sports, 1140.
Bounce pass to Sabonis. hesitates, drives inside. Hammer time! Oh, Domantas Sabonis making a real statement with that rip, and a lot of Kings fans pop right up out of their seats. 71-56, Sacramento.
There you go. There's the G-Man. Of course, the legend that is the G-Man. And we have Chris Brown tickets. A giveaway at 1 o'clock. Live Nation has teamed up with Sactown Sports for your chance to see Chris Brown, Chris Breezy, at Golden One Center this summer. All you have to do is hit up the Folsom Lake Honda Hotline at 1 o'clock. For your chance to win a pair of tickets to see Chris Brown at Golden One Center on July 30th. Heading over to the phones, to that Folsom Lake Honda hotline right now to talk with our guy TC. TC, how you doing, man? I know you got thoughts on yesterday's game, man. How you doing?
Man, I'm all right, man. What's going on, Watkins? What's going on, Brendan?
What's up, what's up?
Just enjoying the Friday, man.
Yeah, man, just vibing. Hey, so check it out. You know, we're going to make it short and sweet. I love how the band battled last tonight, man. You know, how they fought back. I thought it was going to be one of them losses again. And when I seen them fight like that last night, bro, I said, man, look, we're going to be scary going into the playoffs, man, seriously.
Man, absolutely, TC. I don't know if anybody out there read Sam Amick's article this morning, but Sam really does talk a lot about that as well. I mean, this team does – it's really crazy because we've seen them lose again. Brendan, you laid out part of the list earlier. Detroit, Portland, Charlotte, they've struggled with. Houston, San Antonio, Houston. Miami. They struggled with San Antonio twice. Miami, a shorthanded Miami team. For whatever reason, this team does not show up or doesn't play to their capabilities against bad teams or teams that are shorthanded on those nights. And yet, for some reason, these guys step it up and show up against the best teams in the NBA. Sam said in his article, the Kings right now with their 8-5 record against the top four seeds have the best win percentage of any team in the Western Conference in that 5-10 range. So, you know, the Warriors are 2-12 against the top four seeds. Kings are 8-5, like I said. You know, what... It's another weird thing about this team, but what does that tell you about this group of guys? Because I read that as, look, I mean, in the playoffs especially, you don't have to worry about lack of focus, lack of attention. You're going to bring your 100% in every – it doesn't matter if it's a game one, game two, game five, game six. You are going to act like that is the last game of your season every single time. I read that as that's probably a good sign that when this team is locked in – it's a cliche, but they could really beat everybody.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I feel, too, is that the best version of this team can compete with the best in the West.
Right.
And that's what those numbers say. That's kind of what we've seen. And a lot of those are also road wins. You know, the Kings
insane.
Are
two of
worse
those
defensively.
Minnesota.
Yeah. Minnesota's only lost 8 games at home.
Yeah.
And two of those are to the Kings, which is ridiculous.
Yep.
And their defense is phenomenal. Minnesota's, the Kings find ways to score. They find ways to get stops. It almost feels like defensively is where the difference feels
sure.
a bit because
yeah.
they can score against these good teams. Like
right.
you see that again, 130 against the Spurs, 130 against the Lakers, who are really bad defense, good offense, specifically post All-Star break. And then against some of these others, it feels like they find ways to lock up. And for more stretches, maybe you don't let the opposing team run last an entire 10 minutes to a quarter. Instead, you keep it to that 4-6 stretch where it's a 8-minute run rather
right.
than a 15 sort of thing. So I think of it as encouraging, and the best version of this team can handle anybody, but it's confusing, man.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't tell you why.
I can't either. I can't put my finger on it. It's a little concerning as the Kings do, I guess, in a weird way, have a lighter schedule here coming up. They do have, you know, some weaker opponents before things get serious again. They have another matchup, of course, on Sunday against the Rockets. They play the Lakers again. They have a matchup against the Grizzlies, who are pretty scrappy. And then as they close out March, do go to Toronto, do go to Washington, have to play the Sixers, who have been pretty down since Joel Embiid has been out, and then close the month against the Utah Jazz. So there's a couple other low opponents that the Kings should take care of. And of course, there is a couple really good opponents in the Bucks in a couple days. That's going to be on Tuesday. You have the Knicks in Golden 1 Center next Saturday. You also have a back-to-back to end, not a back-to-back games and back-to-back days, but you play the little two-game series later in this month against the Dallas Mavericks on March 26th and March 29th. So there are a couple opportunities here for the Kings to continue to show out. And I mean, Brendan, the one thing that I'm thinking about just in terms of before we get out of March is there's a lot of head-to-head opportunities, specifically those two Dallas games, for this Kings team to make some ground and actually give themselves some cushion before they head to the playoffs.
Yeah, it's going to be big. It's a tight Western Conference, as it's going to be until the close here. Kings a game behind fifth place, but also, well, I guess now they're three games ahead of ninth, a game and a half, though, from that eighth spot. But you really want to miss the play-in. You want to get in that 5-6 Kings, a game from six, or half a game from six, one game from five. And it's just so funny to look at that schedule and, like, why do I feel better about Milwaukee than I do Washington? Or like, you think of that so Dallas disgusting. Back-to-back, and the thing is that, like, it's not like this is happening because the Kings are losing these games while they're on a losing streak.
Right.
It's like you beat the Denver Nuggets, and then you lose to the Detroit Pistons.
Right.
In consecutive nights, and it's like, it's so back and forth. Again, it's not some win streak and they take off a good team and a loss streak and that's when you lost to Houston twice. Like, it is a night-to-night basis. And I'm at the point where I think this team's so inconsistent. It's not even game-to-game. It's quarter-to-quarter.
It is. It really is. I mean, yeah, you'll see. I mean, last night's a perfect example. Here we go. The Kings play pretty even with the Spurs, 31-30 at the end of the first. Second quarter, Kings completely blow them out, 41-28. Then what happens in the third quarter? San Antonio comes right back with a 36-29, and then that final quarter, 34-31. So you're completely right. You have no idea what you're going to get from this team on a game-to-game, a day-to-day, and even a quarter-to-quarter basis. And it's incredibly frustrating. And we're going to talk more about the Kings and their frustration and their frustrating habits. Also, protecting home court versus being on the road. The Kings, again this season, seem to have a lot more juice on the road than at home. Why is that? We're going to talk with the other Kings insider. Frankie Cardicelli should be joining us at the top of the hour. Don't go anywhere. Right here, Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports 11.